60 Minutes. Crude oil prices are rising today, rebounding from last week's 15% drop. The new rise in oil prices is dampening hope for some quick relief in prices at the pump. NPR's Jim Howard says gasoline prices have jumped another 12 cents a gallon over the past 2 weeks.
The rapid run-up in fuel prices this spring has generated political debate and economic concern as consumers feel their disposable income squeezed. Rising oil supplies, lower demand, and a slightly stronger dollar are helping to stem the increase in prices, but analyst Trilby Lundberg says other factors could send prices back up again.
Third world oil demand driving global demand, the weak dollar, and the bump in the dollar may have just been a flash in the pan, and the loss of Libya production.
Other analysts say reduction in prices at the pump will likely take time. Jim Howard, NPR News, Washington.
Syria's government is stepping up its offensive against demonstrators protesting the rule of that country's president. Security forces reportedly going house to house in some areas, rounding up hundreds of people who've been linked to the protests. This is NPR News from Washington.
It's 9:04. Good morning. I'm Rick Anley with New Hampshire Public Radio News. House and Senate negotiators are opening talks on competing plans to reform the state's public pension system. Negotiators are meeting this afternoon to go over plans adopted by each chamber. Both chambers propose plans that would increase the cost to public pensions for firefighters, police, state, and municipal workers. The plans are intended to spare property taxpayers the rising costs of funding the pension system. Opponents say both plans favor employers over employees. For example, they both would increase employee contributions. A House committee is holding a public hearing on a Senate Republican plan to reform the state's fledgling school aid system. Under the plan being heard today, communities would get the same aid each of the next 2 years they got this year. The plan establishes current aid levels as a baseline for communities, but allows those levels to increase or decrease based on student enrollment. The plan would create a new aid category linked to third-grade students testing below proficient in the reading component of state assessment tests. Property-rich communities would no longer be required to help poorer ones with their education costs. The House passed a similar plan to the Senate. This is New Hampshire Public Radio News.
Support for NPR comes from MetLife Foundation, committed to promoting healthy families and good nutrition, on the web at MetLife.org.
Support for New Hampshire Public Radio comes from you, our members, and from Groponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars. At Groponi Auto Junction in Bow, and online 24 hours a day at Groponi.com. And Cooper Cargill Chant, attorneys invested in the people and organizations doing business throughout the region. Offices in North Conway and Berlin. CooperCargillChant.com. The forecast for the Granite State today, it'll be partly sunny in the North Country and along the seacoast as well, where there's a chance of a shower. Mostly sunny for the rest of the state. It'll be breezy as well, with temperatures reaching the lower 60s to near 70. Tonight, becoming mostly cloudy statewide. Overnight lows from the upper 30s in Coos County to mid-40s south. Tuesday, mostly cloudy across the state with some sun for southern regions in the afternoon. Highs tomorrow in the upper 50s to lower 60s. In Colebrook, it's 48 degrees. In Gorham, 51. In Laconia, 54. In Manchester, it's up to 52 degrees. In Keene, 54. And in Portsmouth, it's 57 degrees. I'm Rick Anley. This is New Hampshire Public Radio News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is the Socrates Exchange. It's called Dunbar's Number, a scientific estimate of how many people we can have real relationships with, and it's about 150. The number comes from British anthropologist Robin Dunbar. It's based on his study of all kinds of social groupings, from primates living in the jungle to people residing in huge cities. Dunbar says beyond 150, our brains just can't keep track of more people. And he says even if we could, we simply don't have the time or emotional energy to maintain ties with all of them. Dunbar first published his research about 20 years ago, long before the internet and social media sites. But does Dunbar's number still apply today? Many folks with Facebook accounts will tell you they've got way more friends than a mere 150. So does this mean that technology allows us to handle more relationships? Or does it say that nowadays we're satisfied with a more watered-down definition of a friend? These are just a few of the concepts we'll examine this hour as the Socrates Exchange returns. And the question we're asking, do we need friendship in the age of friending? Let's hear from you. Our number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. The Socrates Exchange is funded in part by the New Hampshire Humanities Council. Our philosopher this month is Ed McGushin. He's an associate professor in the Department of Philosophy at St. Anselm College. Ed, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Laura.
We also have with us a live audience here in Studio D, including high school students from Oyster River, Concord, and Cochico Arts and Technology Academy. And Ed, before we get to our audience, before we get to our callers, just warm us up a little bit, please. What are some of the important philosophical questions that have come up over the ages as philosophers have looked at this question of friendship?
Well, I think the biggest one is, of course, what is it that makes somebody a true friend? And that is one of the first and most important questions that philosophers have asked. And it continues to be a big question for us. And in the modern world, there are so many different phenomena that seem to challenge our traditional definitions and our traditional relationships that the question is still very much alive today. So what is a true friend?
Well, we'll challenge our audience today, I know, and our callers at 1-800-892-6477. And we already have a gentleman at the microphone. Good morning. Thanks for coming out.
Good morning. My name is Mark Andrews. I'm from Cochico Arts and Technology Academy. I'm a senior. I'm curious, because you're a philosopher, I would like to know, on what aspect defines a friend when we have friends on Facebook and they have the capability to change their name, photo doctor or who they are, and you can create friends in Michigan and we live in New Hampshire and we don't never really meet them. Does that make them any less of a friend than a friend that we meet and speak with every day on a social level?
Well, thanks for the question, Mark. Let me turn it around and ask you what you think about that. Do you think that is the case?
I don't believe so at all. I believe it creates an inability to socially communicate when we're actually on a personal level, one-on-one with somebody. It gives us some psychological issues that can manifest over time from only communicating by typing.
Mm. So you think that in a face-to-face relationship, you have a better chance of, I guess, really knowing who the person is that you're speaking to and relating with?
You can't always read sarcasm and things like that. When you're speaking with somebody, you can see in their face more emotion when you're actually speaking one-on-one. On a typing thing, you can't tell what they're really thinking.
Yeah, but people can be hard to read face-to-face as well, right?
Well, we all have masks. We all put up those barriers, but I feel like those barriers are so much easier when we're typing that we don't.
Can I ask you another question related to this? How important do you think it is in friendship to be able to know the other person or to be known by the other person?
It's hugely significant. I think you can't have an honest relationship, any kind of friendships or anything significant if you can't know the person, if you can't and actively be a part of that person's life, if you aren't, I don't know, hang out, be friends with.
So, but what if somebody said that perhaps things like social networking and social media allow us actually to know each other in new and different ways because we're able to express parts of ourselves or aspects of ourselves that maybe we're uncomfortable expressing in those face-to-face relationships. Is that a possibility? And in that case, would that be a situation where maybe a social media allows a relationship to flourish that couldn't otherwise?
I'm not sure that we do. I'm fairly sure that when we try to blossom out like that online, a lot of it's fake. A lot of it's what we want to be, not what we actually are.
Mm. Well, Mark, thanks for coming to the microphone. Can I ask you a quick question, too? Given your feelings, are you on Facebook? And if so, how many friends do you have?
I'm on Facebook. I have 150 friends, and I probably know 25 of them.
You're right at Dunbar's number, then. Thanks for coming to the microphone. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. It's the Socrates Exchange today. And the question we're pondering with you is, do we need friendship in an age of friending? And just to remind everyone, this is a different conversation from a regular exchange program. Ed McGushin's role here is not to answer the question. It's to explore it with you through this Socratic method of asking more questions and more questions. So when you come to the mic or when you call in, stay up with us for a while and we'll have a dialogue. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Ed, we have another brave audience member. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. My name is Emily Hayes. I am a sophomore at Cochico Arts and Technology Academy. Personally, I think on Facebook and that kind of stuff, no, we do not really need friendship there because I had tons of friends, in quotation marks. And personally, I saw their face once or twice in middle school or elementary school. And it's just someone, but I also added my actual real friends in real life. And those are the people who I mainly talk to, or people who have moved away. That's what I really think Facebook was about, is to stay in touch with people who you were once friends with, but it's become this social network that I believe that, oh, look, it's this random stranger, and I've had friend requests where I know them, but I ask them, hey, do you actually know who I am? And they go, no, I just saw your name. It was one of those people who said, I should befriend you. And I was like, what the heck are you doing?
Emily, there are a lot of different points in your comments there. So let me try to pick up on one or two. First, you make an interesting distinction that I think most of us would sort of intuitively recognize between friends, in quotation marks, you know, the people you might friend on Facebook, and real friends. And I wonder what you mean by that distinction. I mean, again, it's something that's kind of intuitive, but could you put it into words?
Yeah. In friends and quotation marks, those are the people whom I've seen once or twice, but I am acquaintances with them, not exactly friends. I wouldn't exactly talk to them on a daily basis, but I am nice to them. I am... my friends in real life, I am actually a part of their life. I am a part of who they are, and I have at least some influence on them. And
can I pick up on that at the point then? So you're a part of their lives in a way that in Facebook you're not. Let me ask a question. Do you think that more and more of our lives, is being lived online? We spend more time online, we do our work online, we interact online, and I wonder if we become more and more immersed in online life, that might be more and more where our real life happens. And if that's the case, wouldn't then our real friends be more likely to be the ones we share online relationships with, and then occasionally we have to interact with people in, you know, I guess the non-online world?
I guess you could say, but like a part that I've noticed is that kids my age don't go up to other kids their age now. They stay in their own social groups, which I think is kind of a problem because kids don't actually make friends that way. It's more on the online that I don't know who you are. It's kind of like...
So, Emily, have we gotten less friendly because of friending? Is that what you're saying?
I can't exactly say we've gotten less friendly. It's just that we haven't actually held our hands out saying, hi, I'm Emily, nice to meet you, and that kind of stuff. We've more like, oh, look, it's someone I know. Let's friend them.
Just one quick point on that. It's a really interesting observation, and I wonder, you know, in face-to-face interactions, there's a kind of risk. There's a kind of risk that one takes to do that. Hey, I'm Emily. You know, walk up to somebody. Whereas online, there certainly are risks there, but there's a sense of a distance and a security. You don't have that proximity. It seems a little less risky, and I wonder if there's something profound underlying that.
I'm guessing it's the way kids grown up now. If I take a look at it, when I was younger, I didn't grow up on Facebook. I didn't grow up with that security blanket around me. I grew up saying, oh, look, where am I now? Who can I meet? Who can I say hi to? And I grew up not having Facebook around me to think I was protected by Facebook. I grew up thinking my parents protected me and knowing enough to not give my phone number out randomly and not just giving my name and becoming acquaintances.
Well, Emily, thanks a lot for for coming out with us today. I really appreciate it. And our number here on the Socrates Exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Join us as we look at this question, do we need friendship in the age of friending? Some of the concepts we've been looking at, Ed, how do you define the word friend? How has that definition changed over the years? If we're on Facebook or other types of social media, how do we see the definitions of friendship changing? And if the word friend has become watered down, what new word could we use to signify those deep relationships? Give us a call. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Coming up, we'll start taking your calls. We'll hear more from our studio audience. And we'll talk to an author who has looked at this idea of friendship and Facebook. All that's coming up. Stay with us.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members and from IamCollegeBound.org, providing resources to inspire New Hampshire high school students to pursue higher education. Information online at IamCollegeBound.org. From MVP Healthcare, providing wellness-driven health plans for businesses of all sizes. Information at MVPHealthcare.com. And from Jaguar Exeter, featuring the new 2011 Jaguar XJ. Agile, responsive, and refined. An innovative blend of design and technology. Jaguar XJ. Online at jaguarexeter.com. More on the Socrates Exchange on NHPR at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. We take a look at the intelligence from data seized at Osama bin Laden's compound. New Hampshire weather today, partly to mostly sunny, with highs from the lower 60s north, ranging to around 70 in the south. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today it's our Socrates Exchange, where once a month we examine one question using the Socratic method of asking more questions. This month that question is, do we need friendship in the age of friending? Our co-host this hour is Ed McGushin, associate professor in the Department of Philosophy at St. Anselm College. Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. By the way, we're coming to you live from Studio D today. We have an audience with us here in studio, high school students from Oyster River, Concord, and Cochico Arts and Technology Academy. One more time, that exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. And Ed, let's go to the phones now. Vera is calling from Dover. Hi, Vera. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. The young gentleman that was speaking before that said that you can only have friends face-to-face, I was a military brat my whole life, and I was a soldier for 20 years, and we'd meet friends face-to-face. We'd know them for a year or 2 years, and then the only contact we would have with those lifelong friends would be snail mail, and now we're doing Facebook. I'm reconnecting with people I was in high school with that I hadn't seen or heard from, and I think that a good writer can put sarcasm and humor into emails and little posts just as well as you can face-to-face. I think sometimes it's easier to express yourself, although I wouldn't put anything that was really meaningful on Facebook. I'd certainly would in an email to a friend that I couldn't see face-to-face.
Well, Vera, stay on the line with us. Go ahead, Ed McGushin.
Hey, Vera, thanks for the call. I'm an Army brat, too, so I understand, you know, every couple of years picking up and rolling on to the next base. And I do think that in a way it does take a toll on your connection to other people, obviously. And so perhaps the new social media allows one to stay in touch. But do you think that, you know, something like the military might be a special case because there's such a strong bond in the military, you know, sort of a common commitment and a very strong sense of unity. Do you think it would be different for somebody who had to move away so regularly, who didn't have that strong sense of unity that you get in the military?
Well, I think the foundation of that is that you get to know these people and then you move on. But I'm having the same kinds of relationship with people I was in college with. I graduated in 79, got married, lost contact, and now that I have my maiden name back, my friends from college are finding me. I can't travel back to Oregon. So we've reconnected and make that friendship. Certainly the military is a unique group, but so would the social contacts you make in college.
I think this touches on a point that actually came up when Emily was talking a minute ago as well, that Facebook is very useful for people who want to stay in touch with each other, friends who got to know each other in some context and then move away. But that is, the underlying premise there is that we live in a society in which people move away, in which individual mobility, freedom to move is not only greater, but it's very much encouraged. It's very much a part of our cultural values. And I wonder if you think that that underlying premise might mitigate against deep, lasting, committed friendships where one gets to really share one's life with another person.
Well, I will tell you that I moved back to New Hampshire after being gone for 30 years and reconnected with the friends who were my closest friends. Well, I lived here for 3 years and then moved to Germany. And I would say that that seems to me to be sectional within the United States. New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, people seem to stay here. People spend their whole lives together. People talk about high school friends that they haven't seen in 30 years, but they follow them in the newspapers and they follow them in politics. And one of the kids I was in high school with here was a elected official in Dover. I was shocked because that wasn't who I thought he was.
Well,
I would agree to a certain extent that that it does depend on the society you're a part of.
Can I ask you a quick question, Vera? And thanks so much for calling. Real interesting. You did survive with the friends that you had before Facebook. I wonder, you know, has this made your life better, being able to connect with people in this way? And do you fear sometimes that because you're spending time on Facebook, you're ignoring the folks down the street?
Yes, absolutely. And I've had to, actually, it's not Facebook, it's those pernicious games.
The pernicious games, is that what you said?
Yeah. I clocked myself. I was spending 6 hours playing Farmville. I'm not doing that anymore.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. The Facebook has allowed me to reconnect with people and to sometimes to just get closure to a relationship. Because when you move so abruptly, as we did, sometimes we'd get 10 days notice.
Wow.
When you move that abruptly, you really can't say goodbye. You don't end a friendship normally as most kids do. You know, it just stops.
Well, Vera, this is real interesting, given how much you moved and given what Ed said about mobility. So thank you very much for calling in. Our number here on the Socrates Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And Ed, for more on this question of do we need friendship in the age of friending, our executive producer, Keith Shields, spoke with Dylan Witkower. He's a lecturer of philosophy at Coastal Carolina University and editor of the book Facebook and Philosophy.
Facebook has allowed us to maintain relationships that in the past we probably wouldn't have made the effort to maintain. The opportunity cost for creating a connection on Facebook is so low. And the bar of expected interaction is set so low, too, where you can friend somebody and then pretty much never talk to them again. What that does is it creates an opportunity where there's an opening that's very easy to make. And then later on, you find out, is that an opening that I want to take advantage of? Is that an opening that the other person wants to take advantage of? Is that something that we're going to reciprocate and build on? Maybe it isn't. But in a lot of cases, I think we end up friending people. And it's possible then for that relatively minor relationship to become something that's rightfully called friendship in the honorific sense. A lot of the discussion that I've seen in philosophy in particular has really still been dominated by this old Aristotelian model of friendship, not just in academics, but in more traditional commentators on what friendship is becoming and what Facebook is doing to us, where the old Aristotelian model is that there are these three different kinds of friendship. We have so-called friendships of use, and here we might keep in mind something like a coworker, and a friendship of pleasure, something we might have in mind like a drinking buddy or something like that, where once that pleasure goes away, the relationship goes away too. So the drinking buddy stops drinking or something like that, and then you don't really have anything to do together anymore. And that shows that that relationship was always just a friendship of pleasure and not what Aristotle and sort of traditional commentators want to call it, a true friendship. a friendship that's directed towards virtue, where the two friends, their relationship consists in their assisting one another to strive towards virtue and to become their best possibilities, to serve as support and as models for one another in trying to become better people. He even says you can't even have friends in a true sense unless you're already a virtuous person. So it sets the bar very high for true friendship. Now, today, I don't think we set the bar quite that high, but I think there's still a tendency to talk about true friendship and to denigrate these other kinds of relationships. Now, one thing that I think is really valuable about a lack of autonomy and privacy that we get on Facebook is that somebody who we think of as just a friendship of utility or of pleasure, somebody that we don't really take very seriously as a true friend, if we post something that has to do with our deep moral conviction, or we post something that's very emotionally laden about something that we're going through or something that we're struggling with, we can see different people respond who we never would have approached directly looking for that kind of response. And in that way, it's possible for these lesser kinds of relationships to deepen. One kind of experience that I've had that seems like many other people have had as well is that I've friended somebody and I thought, well, you know, I'm never really going to talk to this person. As I've seen how that person's life has emerged over those intervening years, it's turned out that we have much more in common today than we ever did then, and that what we have in common is much deeper and more important than what we had in common then. I think there are a lot of negatives as well in conducting our friendship relationships online and through Facebook in particular. If we look at a friendship of virtue just on its own, there are real limits to what you can do when you conduct that friendship online. And closely connected with that, I think it's possible for us to get an illusion of closeness on Facebook where it's not clear that we're really building relationships that we can depend on when we're in need of support. Very easy for someone to seem like they're going to be there for you and to not really have that level of commitment. It's very easy for one party in a relationship to read a lot of status updates, read a lot of posts from the other person, feel very closely connected with them, and have the other person not do the same and to sort of have no idea. So the way that these relationships are constructed virtually leads to a lot of problems as well. This sort of motivating thematic question of whether we need friendship in an age of friending. Certainly not every case of friending is a case of friendship, but every time we friend, we open up that possibility. If we look at what the friendship consists of day to day, I think most of our friendships consist of things like chatting about something unimportant and sharing an idle thought. And that holds with all of these different kinds of friendship. And that's the thing that Facebook gets criticized most for, that so much on Facebook is this trivial and meaningless stuff that doesn't matter. But I think that what that criticism leaves out is that most of our face-to-face friendships, similarly, consist of things that are meaningless and trivial and don't really matter. So the point can't be the content. The point has to be something about having that relationship and maintaining that relationship and having the kind of interaction where we can think of ourselves as living alongside the other person. That way of experiencing our own lives as being always potentially shared, even when we're not with our friend. That's something that friending manages to recreate very successfully.
That conversation with Dylan Witkower, editor of Facebook and Philosophy, was produced by Exchange executive producer Keith Shields. It's the Socrates Exchange today. My co-host this hour, Ed McGushin, associate professor in the Department of Philosophy at St. Anselm College. And Ed, let's go back to a member of our live audience. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having us. My name is Paul Stettner, and I'm a senior at Oyster River High School. And personally, my beliefs somewhat mirror that of the previous caller. It's my personal belief that a meaningful friendship cannot be made through a computer screen, that you need face-to-face interaction for it to flourish.
What do you think you get in that face-to-face interaction that you don't get through the screen?
Well, for example, if there's something wrong, somebody's upset, you can't see their face when you're talking to them on Facebook or MySpace or what have you. You can't see that they're upset, so you could be talking about something completely unrelated and have no idea what's actually going on in their mind.
Why? Let me ask you a further question on that. Why do you think we need that something else? Why isn't the Facebook interaction enough? As he said, you always have that sense, at least, of the possibility of your life being shared with others on Facebook. You know, that sharing of common day-to-day chatter, you know, when you update your status or post things on people's walls or whatever it is. What is that other thing, and why do you think it's important, or why is it important to you?
Well, I think that Facebook and MySpace and social networks certainly can be used as a catalyst into an existing relationship you have with somebody, but it's science that human beings are social creatures, and we need the face-to-face interaction to really be able to connect with a person.
Aristotle also agreed, to go back to the sort of old view of Aristotle that I guess our guest, the other philosopher on that little bit, seemed to suggest Aristotle might be a little tired these days. I'm not so sure. I still like what Aristotle has to say about friendship. And he thinks that human beings are social animals. And he thinks that only truly virtuous people can truly be friends. And that's maybe one of the most controversial things he says about friendship. I'm wondering what you think about that. Do you have to be a good person to be in a true, genuine, complete friendship?
Well, depends on your definition of what a good person is. Well, I guess you could say birds of a feather flock together. There's always friends for somebody out there.
That's another point. What's more important in that friendship? Is it the commonality, or is it the differences?
I think both are equally important. I think the differences are what keep a friendship. They help maintain it and basically give people something to talk about. And the similarities are what attract people to each other.
Well, thanks for coming out.
Yeah,
appreciate it. I've been enjoying hearing from our audience. Again, we've got high school students today with us from Oyster River, Concord, and Cochico Arts and Technology. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR is our number. And Ed, let's go back to the phones. It's Kathy and Antrim. Go ahead, Kathy. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to talk about, I suppose it's not, my friendships didn't start through Facebook. Through online gaming, but I have what I would consider to be very deep substantive friendships that are fully online.
When you say fully online, you said at the beginning of your call that you didn't start your friendships online. So
we didn't start on Facebook. We started through online gaming. So I have friends that I met through online games. And whom I now talk to on Facebook, outside of game, on the telephone. But this friendship started solely online, and whom I've never met in real life. But we talk about things other than the game and Facebook and things like that. We talk about life, and, you know, I have a young son. And when I moved, I just moved to New Hampshire while pregnant. And so I didn't have any friends here, and I believe that those online friendships were really valuable to me and still are.
Do you? That's very interesting. I mean, do you ever have the sense, or do you ever feel like maybe there's something else or something missing from that you'd like to have from that friendship or not?
In a sense, we talk about, we're currently making plans for a camping trip, and there is an element of, well, this will be kind of strange, meeting these people that I've
meeting face
never
to face.
Seen.
Right.
But at the same time, I suppose it's almost, to an extent, like a family reunion. So there is that want to have a face-to-face relationship because you can't go bowling with an online friend or something like that. But I do believe that you can have an actual friendship, just like my mom lives far away, and though I can't go bowling with her, I still love her just as much and value our conversation.
It sounds like you know, this idea of knowing somebody very well through virtual reality and then meeting them for the first time in, well, I guess actual reality. You know, there's a little, I don't know, I guess I could see a little bit of anxiousness about that, because on the one hand, you seem to know that person. And yet meeting them suggests that you don't know that person in a way. And I think in a way, maybe you don't know that person at the same time.
And Kathy, can I ask you a question, too? In the piece that Keith produced, he talked about Aristotle's definitions of friendship, and there was a friendship of pleasure, where it's all about what you do when you get together, and the gentleman gave the example of the drinking buddy, and then the guy stops drinking, so what do you do? What if some of your online gaming friends decided, I'm not into this online gaming anymore? Would they still be friends?
Actually, interestingly enough, my son is only 12 weeks, so I have not been able to game at all. Right. 12 weeks. And some of those friendships did go away when I stopped gaming. But a large majority of them, which is a little bit shocking to me, are still intact. They still call me and ask how I'm doing, how he's doing, and talk to me on Facebook. And we'll get on online through forums and things like that and talk on there. So I believe that a lot of times on online gaming, they are friendships. Pleasure,
okay, Kathy, got to cut you off there. I do apologize. We're going to a short break. When we come back, more from our studio audience. Stay with us.
Word of mouth gives you context for a rapidly changing world.
It's a giant jigsaw puzzle, trying to fit everything together so that we'll have a really amazing view of our place in the universe. I think we'll have a handle on that in the next 10 to 20 years.
Stay up to date on the latest research, ideas, and trends at wordofmouthradio.org and join us live Monday through Thursday at noon on NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Worldwide Computer Solutions Incorporated, IT solutions, including software application development and network services that deliver momentum and productivity. Information at wwcs.com. And the New Hampshire Children and Nature Coalition bringing the film Mother Nature's Child to Concord's Red River Theater May 13th through the 16th. Details at nhchildreninnature.org. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Today it's the Socrates Exchange. On the Exchange, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this month we're pondering the question, do we need friendship in the age of friending? We have a live audience with us here in Studio D. Ed McGushin is my co-host, and Ed, let's go right back to our audience. Good morning, sir. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Good morning, Laura. Good morning, Ed. I am at, you know, the opposite end of the spectrum from these high school students. This June, I'll be celebrating my 50th anniversary from graduating from Cardinal Hayes High School in the Bronx.
And what's your name?
John Ogrodovchik. That's why they call me John O. And I'd like to pose a question, kind of a different spin on this, and it's sort of, where do we think the need for friendship comes from? And I was wondering if you had any thought for that. We seem to have this need, and we've been speaking about it in terms of what a real friendship is or what isn't, and so on and so forth. But I often ponder why we even have this in the beginning.
Well, it's an excellent, excellent question and a very philosophical question. And what I will do as a good philosopher is turn it right around and ask you what you think about that.
I knew you would do that. That's the echo approach over here. I believe that, at least it's in my gut, that this need for relationships basically comes from the universe itself, and that it isn't only in us, but it's in the stars and the planets and the galaxies. We are part of evolution, and we are constantly evolving. And so as a human species, basically in its infancy, in the 13.6 billion years of the universe, at least that we know of, we are growing. We are growing and expressing this awareness of what is already there as a power in the universe. And we were talking about Facebook a little bit, and I was thinking that this is part of the evolution too. We're moving from a very individualistic sense of, you know, relationship to a more global sense of relationship, and it's not going to happen overnight. So there's a pull and there's a push, you know, in this growingness that we have. And I was just wondering what other people might have to, you know, have thoughts on this?
I think that's a great question maybe to throw out to our live audience here, see what they have to say. But I think Aristotle would be very sympathetic to what you're saying. I think Aristotle also sees human beings as an expression of a larger whole.
Yes.
And he would perhaps suggest that it's hard to be in a friendship with something like a universe that doesn't respond to us in kind in our own terms. But we have friendships with others, other human beings, because we can communicate to each other and make our goodwill for each other known. And so I think that is an expression of something larger than just me or you or maybe even the human species.
John, great thoughts. Thank you so much for coming to the microphone. And we've got lots of audience members with us this morning who've been coming up and getting Socratic with us. Ed, let's go to another one. Thanks for being here. Go ahead.
Hi, my name's Libby Green. I'm from Concord High School. And because there's been a lot of talk of social media, I personally think that social media like Facebook and blogging sites and MySpace, they serve as a mirror for what we would call the real world, like physically being around other people. And I think that they don't, by their nature, define relationships. I think that they're more of a tool through which relationships can act. So I have good friends that I communicate with in person, and I also use Facebook to send them links or chat with them if we can't be together. And I have people I don't know as well in person who I don't know as well on Facebook. So I personally use it as a mirror of my day-to-day life when I can't be there.
That's a great metaphor. Let me ask you, though, do you think, I mean, you used two metaphors there, a metaphor of a mirror and the metaphor of a tool. And in both cases, those seem to be things that we use and that they're there for us to manipulate for our own purposes. Mm-hmm. But it is true that our tools change us. For instance, you take something like the car. You know, it was developed as a means of transportation for us to use. And yet, as consequently, it's changed our whole way of life. So from our architecture to the way we work to where we live and how we live. And, of course, it's increasingly changing the globe and the climate and international politics and at every level. So I wonder if it really is just a mirror. Because if it is a kind of tool that we use, it may be subtly changing how we live and how we interact. What do you think about that?
I think that it can if you let it. So if you want to drive a car everywhere, even if you could walk, if you want to drive a car everywhere and you could walk and you let that kind of take a hold of you and you don't fight it at all, then you can get that and let the world warm up, and bad things and good things probably will come of it too because it's convenient.
I think that's true what you say, and yet, as we know, it's harder and harder, almost impossible to live without a car in most places. You know, so one person can I think you're right, you can try to think about it and resist, but it almost has a life of its own at a certain point.
It does, but I think that as individuals, it's something that you can fight. And if enough individuals fight back against the way that social media are perhaps changing the face of friendship, then it's not just a bunch of individuals anymore. It's everyone, and it's a group, and that's the way things like get done.
All right. That's quoting Margaret Mead there, right? She said something along the lines of, never underestimate the power of one person to create change. That's how it's always been done.
Yes.
Something along
Margaret
those lines. Libby, thanks
exactly
a lot for being out. Thanks a lot for coming in. Again, I want to thank our students for coming here from Cochico and Concord and Oyster River. And we've got another member of our audience going to the microphone. And thanks to you for coming out. Hello.
Hi, my name is Charlotte. I'm a sophomore at Cochico Arts and Technology Academy. And I definitely agree with a lot of what she said. It's definitely a tool that I use. And I don't think that friendship is obsolete in the least. I think that we can cultivate these friendships outside of Facebook, and that Facebook helps us in a lot of ways to make them stronger when we can't be with people. So I can go home after being with my friends at school, and I can continue conversations on Facebook. And one big thing about our school is that we have
what's called a virtual snow day. So we go online for our classes when we have snow days. And I sort of make this joke sometimes where the classrooms are like our classrooms at school, and then Facebook is sort of like our virtual common room where we all hang out. And so there's a lot of friends where I have a couple friends who don't use their real last names on Facebook. And to be honest, I don't actually remember their real last names. And I have friends who don't put their birthday on Facebook, and sometimes I don't remember their birthdays. But, and maybe that's Facebook hindering me in a bit of a way, but I think at the same time, it's also helping me to friends that I maybe might not remember their birthdays, but Facebook reminds me to, in person, say happy birthday to them, or things like that. So I feel that Facebook helps friendships in a lot of ways.
It's making you a better friend, yeah. Seems to be what you're saying.
Yeah, it's an interesting question for me, because I look at, you know, the lives that you all are able to live with the technologies for connecting to others, and I compare that to when I grew up, where after school you go home and, you know, there's one phone in the house and it's got a curly cord attached to the wall, and if you're on it for more than about 15 minutes, your parents are yelling at you to get off the phone. And otherwise you can't really be in touch with your friends. And so I wonder, I mean, that's a clear difference. Does that make friendship easier and better to be connected anytime, all the time, anywhere? Or is it important maybe to have places and times where you're not connected and can't be connected? And I wonder if that sort of, I guess, quiet time might be very important for cultivating oneself in such a way as to be able to interact in a relationship with others. I don't know. But I can see the advantages. I mean, I certainly would have loved to have been able to stay in touch with my friends all the time, anytime, whenever I wanted to.
Yeah, and at the same time, like what you're saying, the quiet time, and also not just that with yourself, but also cultivating it with certain friends. Like, I can talk to 5 friends at once on Facebook, but sometimes that sort of makes it harder to just focus on one person. So I think it's definitely important to maybe go out with friends, hang out outside of, you know, your house and talking on Facebook, to really be able to maybe turn off your cell phone, because you can go on Facebook on your phones now, your iPods. So maybe not to be constantly on it and still cultivate with friends. I think that's important, but I think it's possible. But at the same time, a lot of people are always on Facebook because it's so available. But I don't think that it's impossible to cultivate friendships with one friend without using Facebook.
I like your optimism, and I think I share it in general.
it makes me
think, though, that on Facebook, when you're with other people on Facebook, you have to be commenting and communicating. But there's a way in which real friends can be together in a much more profound way without saying a thing. And I wonder if that's even possible in social media, to really be together without having to say anything. And if that might be something detrimental there. But again, I do think your optimism is well placed.
Thanks for being with us. I appreciate you standing up and coming to the mic. And you know, what you said reminds me of something that came up again in the interview that Keith did, that a lot of our interactions, even face-to-face with friends, aren't deep and personal. You know, it's how you doing, you know, what's up, and oh, I'm busy today. So, you know, that's there too. It's not like every face-to-face interaction that you and I have, Ed, is, you know, rich and meaningful. A lot of it's just, you know, nice shirt you got on. So.
Yeah, it would be overwhelming if every exchange had to be profound and intense and laden with heavy emotions.
That's right. That's right. Well, one more person is coming up to the microphone. Go ahead. Thanks for being here. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Michael Calden. I'm a junior at Oyster River High School. And one thing that I've noticed with Facebook especially, but also other social sites, is that sometimes people can get socially exclusive to only the internet connection that they have with other people. They sort of withdraw from their actual real life friends, and it actually has a detrimental effect in turn with their relationships with the friends that they've known since kindergarten and what have you, because they feel they can express themselves more publicly over the internet, whereas you know, if you're afraid to speak in public, or you just have problems expressing yourself outside of the written or typing language, then it would be quite difficult for them and could harm some of their personal relationships as well.
Well, it's funny the way you put that. There's a sort of it's a kind of double-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, for somebody who's, you know, there are certain people who are shy or uncomfortable in face-to-face situations, but may really open up online, and that might give them a chance to interact with people that they wouldn't have in other relationships. And yet, you also point out a possible detrimental rebound effect on their face-to-face or real-world relationships. Do you think there's, you know, are there times when that might be a positive thing to be able to do that? Are there times when it might be a negative thing? How would you draw the line there, if you would?
Well, there's not really a place where you could draw a straight, clear-cut line with something like that. I mean, there's cases where it's too much, and there's cases where it, you know, people aren't utilizing it, and then there's cases where people have found a nice and healthy balance. But if people find that they can express themselves easier to other people through the internet, then they'll tend to express themselves more over that than they will in real life. And they'll sort of withdraw from public and the social friends that they have.
Yeah, and it seems your question or your comments also point to the fact that maybe we have different kinds of expectations and possibilities for online relationships than maybe in our face-to-face relationships, and it might be important not to confuse those things, right? I mean, you may be able to have certain kinds of relationships with people on the internet and express yourself in certain ways that would be hard to do in person and vice versa. And if we're not careful about that and we start confusing those distinctions, because as you say, there might be a lot of gray area in there, that could potentially cause some problems with relationships.
Well, yeah, and then, I mean, I think I have around 200 friends on Facebook, if I'm not mistaken, and some of them I talk to, some of them I don't, but I do know most, if not all of them, in person. I don't go around typically adding people I don't know, because, I mean, you're just looking at a picture. You're not actually looking at the person's face and saying, okay, I can see this person, I can touch him, he's real. All right, and you can't actually look at a picture and say, is this person real or did they just get this off of Google Images or something?
You know, Michael, I have a quick question for you. You talked about some people are shy and they express themselves better online. Does that become a crutch, though, for that shy person where they don't develop the skills that they need to get out there in the real world?